Hello, this is Jim Person.
And I'm Kristen Auerbach.
And we'd like to welcome you to the Fairfax County Pawcast. It's the podcast that features news, stories, and events from the Fairfax County Animal Shelter. On this edition of the Pawcast, we'll talk to Animal Control Sergeant Kim England about her work helping animals and people here in Fairfax County. Kim will share information about wildlife habits and activities during springtime. Then we're going to talk puppy season, which is just around the corner. Going to share some tips that you'll want to hear if you're thinking of adding a puppy or young dog to your family. And finally, we'll talk about Solomon, our featured pet of the week. So another Pawcast edition, Kristen, and we have another animal control officer with us this time. It's great that we're getting the chance to kind of meet some of the folks behind the animal control badge, if you will.
It is. Most people don't know we have about 30 animal control officers.
All right.
We've got many more to meet.
We've got a lot of topics to
talk about.
A lot of shows lined up. And our animal control officer with us today is Sergeant Kim England. Kim, welcome to the podcast. Glad to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. As Chris and I joked, we have talked to a couple of animal control officers in Fairfax County, and I know personally it's been kind of eye-opening. It's like, I didn't really realize, you guys and gals did all that kind of stuff. Can you kind of maybe just kind of set the scene for us and talk about a day in the life of an animal control officer, which I know they're all different, but, some of the things you come across, what do you do?
Sure. Well, our day starts. We meet together at the animal shelter, and we have a roll call just to go over any pertinent events, things to be aware of that are going on in the county. And then we'll check out any open or active cases that need to be followed up on in a timely manner. Some officers have their own personal cases, too, that they work on their own to follow up with that aren't as time sensitive, that they work as they have availability. Mm-hmm. And then we work all the calls that come into the dispatch center over there off Alliance Drive. And the call takers take all the non-emergency and emergency police department, fire department calls. And then our calls come through there as well. And we may get anything from dogs running loose, sick or injured domestic pets, sick or injured wildlife that may be in the living quarters of people's homes that we need to remove for them. We also work animal bites, whether it's to a person or a pet, just to determine if there's a potential rabies exposure so we can impose a quarantine. That's usually done at home, especially if it's a pet that's been exposed to a potential rabid animal, or if a cat or dog bites somebody. If there's nothing egregious to it, that's usually a home quarantine as well. I know people think that we're going to take their animal away, and that's pretty rare unless it's something, like I said, that's more criminal in nature, like a dangerous dog type case. We also work maltreat cases, which with spring and summer coming, we do tend to go on more animals left in vehicle calls. We call them maltreat because it could rise to cruelty, but maltreat can be anything from an animal that needs grooming, nails clipped.
There's severe matting, which is really painful for animals. That's caused by a lack of grooming, especially with longer-haired animals, and nails, that can be curled all the way around from not being cut. So these are actually pretty serious medical conditions when they're not taken care of.
You mentioned this roll call, and it sounds like you start the day knowing you're going to go one way, but it could change drastically depending if folks have a 911 call or a non-emergency call for animal-related issue.
Correct. We generally have a squad of six total, including myself. I try to get out in the field as much as I can, but sometimes I tend to have to stay back at the animal shelter and work on administrative-type duties. But with the five officers, as you know, the county is split up into eight district stations. So usually the way we'll assign our officers for the day is each officer has two patrol areas. So Selly and Fair Oaks go together. Mount Vernon and Franconia go together. Mason and West Springfield. And then McLean and Reston. And then we'll have the fifth, what we call field unit, who who tries to float around as best
kind
in the whole county.
Kind of a rover.
to pick up all the calls that are holding or assist other officers.
Right. Yeah, because the county is a little over 400 square miles, so that's a big area to cover.
It is, and response times are usually a little bit longer because their areas are so large. Mm. So we do rely on our patrol officers that we work with as well sometimes for the more immediate assistant type calls. Like if a dog or cat was hit by a car, we'll obviously respond so we can take the animal to the vet. Mm-hmm. But sometimes patrol officers are closer and they'll assist us, and we really appreciate that.
Okay. The toughest question I'm going to ask you, what's your favorite part of doing this job, being an animal control officer?
I would say meeting all of the interesting animals and people that live in the county. Mm. I was very surprised one of my first days on my own, even though I grew up in the county. One of my first calls was a loose pig on Fairfax County Parkway. So you can imagine my surprise when it wasn't a potbelly pig either.
Oh, wow. That's something you don't forget.
Right.
Do you get training to deal with animals like that? Like, is there special training for, like, what you do if you find a pig or a cow?
Unfortunately, no. As you know, we go through the 6-month-long police academy. But I believe that we try to recruit officers that have some sort of knowledge with animals. And we'll find that our squads are diverse as far as some people are good with livestock. Some are more of a small animal background. Maybe they were a vet tech or a vet tech assistant.
Okay.
Some that have worked at zoos, which is great because exotics, there are a lot of exotics in the county. And I personally don't have much experience or knowledge with them. So when I went on my first rattlesnake call, I definitely needed assistance from my peers who had more knowledge on how to handle them.
Keep me at the office for that one, okay?
I think I would just say no.
You're right. So, talking about pigs and rattlesnakes, how about bats? I mean, that's kind of an odd one, I think. But we, I guess, hear stories of people that have bats in the attic or whatever. I mean, is it true that bats do come into houses?
Yes, they usually live somewhere on the outside of houses. They'll have a colony in sort of the overhang louver-type areas that are on the outside of people's homes. They can't live inside, but they do like that shelter. And when they're high up like that, they do get some warmth because they're mammals. And they do hibernate over the winter, but they're starting to come out of hibernation now. Mm-hmm. And starting to have their babies. So we do recommend if people have a bat infestation that they try and exclude them now before they do start having their babies, because we do feel that's inhumane to exclude them when they have young.
Right. So what does that mean, and what should somebody do if they find a bat, have a bat, see a bat, that kind of thing?
Well, always call the non-emergency police number for any bat inside the living quarters, because we'll come out and capture the bat, and we have a form that we fill out for the health department just to determine if there's a potential exposure or not, so we know if we need to test it for rabies or if we can release it back to the wild. Also, sometimes it seems that the juveniles end up in the homes because, as you can imagine,
the juvenile bats.
Yes, okay. The juvenile bats are getting away from their mother for the first time,
right.
And they might make some bad decisions and end up in people's houses. So if it's very cold out and there's no exposure, we wouldn't just necessarily release it. We would take it to a bat rehabber.
Hmm. Okay, interesting. And by the way, that number to call is 703-691-2131, which
correct.
I think is the non-emergency number. So we're talking about, you know, kind of starting to warm up, springtime season. Maybe talk about some other animals that you guys deal with, maybe with the onset of spring. Is there something more common than just the normal time of year?
Well, we will see a lot of orphaned wildlife, unfortunately. Sometimes it's just a matter of a baby bird that's fallen from the nest. And if you can visually see the nest and it's within a reaching distance or maybe a ladder, we ask that people try to put the bird back in the nest it's okay to touch the animal. The mother will still accept it.
Interesting.
Yes. Please remember that, everyone. It's okay to put them back in. People, when I grew up, there was the idea that if you touch them, you know, the parent would reject them and they would die, and that's just not true.
Okay, interesting.
We do have the resource, which is wonderful, of rehabbers, but they do get overwhelmed in the springtime, and there is a known, they have a better chance of survival if they just go back to the nest.
Sure.
Now, obviously, if you keep putting it back
right,
a couple
right.
times and then it keeps falling out, then of course we'll come and pick it up and transfer it to a wildlife rehabber because we don't want it to die. Or if the nest is too high.
I was going to say, or if I'm, you know, uncomfortable climbing up a ladder or just, you know, uncomfortable
right.
with the bird or whatever, still call that non-emergency number.
Exactly. Yeah. Or if there's a cat stalking the bird, we don't want it to be eaten.
Okay.
Or like if a hawk, you notice a hawk is
above
waiting. So.
Okay. We're talking with Animal Control Sergeant Kim England, and final question or two before we run out of time. We are, you know, starting the spring season. I am so glad the weather finally hoping to warm up, and then we can complain about being hot in the summer. But flea and tick season, is that kind of the synonymous with spring as well?
It is. Unfortunately, tick season doesn't end, but maybe for a month or two at most, if we're lucky. Mm. I just picked a tick off my dog yesterday.
Really?
So, and then flea, I mean, they do have a little bit shorter season unless it's warm.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have the benefit of the snow and the freeze to kind of kill them if they're outside. But we'll start to see them once the freezes stop.
Right.
And I'm predicting a very bad flea and tick season.
Why is that?
You know, it's like I'm like the farmer's almanac of fleas and ticks. I just have a sixth sense about these things. So get your preventatives on now.
Wow. Interesting. So all the snow, all the cold weather, that really doesn't help us deal with the ticks.
You would think that it would, but they're very resilient.
Wow. Okay. As I mentioned, just about out of time. Final thought, final question. Is there something I haven't asked you, something you want folks to know about animal control, about animals, wildlife? Just kind of give you the open mic.
Well, if you can approach a wild animal, then there's probably something wrong with it. And to please call the non-emergency number, even if you just have a question or you want to speak to an animal control officer, we do have the ability to make those phone calls. And sometimes that's all it is just discussing the matter over the phone. And then if we need to come out, then that's fine. We do hope that when people do notice sick or injured wild animals or orphaned animals that need our assistance to either if they could remain on scene to show us or if it's in an intersection and they're driving by, at least to tell us which side of the road and which direction, just because it's hard to spot sometimes when we're driving as well.
Sure.
Maneuvering traffic to know which side of the road and which direction to look because it's hard to walk intersections.
Okay.
So
awesome. Kim, thanks for being on the podcast with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, great job. Remember that number too, folks, 703-691-2131. And Kristen, we're going to talk about, again, keeping up with that kind of spring theme.
Yes.
And just around the corner, folks may be wanting to add a new puppy to their home. So a lot of things we need to know.
This topic was inspired because the other day someone came into the shelter with a 5-week-old beagle puppy they had purchased at the age of 4 weeks from a breeder. It was infested with this thing called walking lice, which is contagious, which can spread to people and is really awful.
Gosh.
But four weeks is much, much too young. And so we wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, puppies and what all that implies.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I guess the first question I know I have, and then maybe a lot of folks have, is about the potty training. I mean, how long does it really take to potty train a puppy?
You know, it just varies, and it kind of depends on the effort you put into it. If you work with a trainer, if you crate train, but it can take up to a year. You know, dogs don't really mature from puppyhood until around that 1-year mark, and so people should plan on it being a lengthy process of potty training. For the most part, we say that puppies should be left alone. About an hour for every month of age. So a 3-month-old puppy should not be expected to sort of, it needs to go potty about every 3 hours, and a 4-month-old puppy about every 4 hours.
Mm. Okay, good rule of thumb. How about the spay and neutering question? How old do they have to be?
It's spaying and neutering for people who get a dog from a breeder or a pet store. They make that decision. It can be anywhere from 8 weeks to about 6 months. We spay and neuter puppies and kittens at the shelter at 8 weeks.
Mm, okay. And I guess, besides the spaying, the neutering, and the potty training, some of the behavioral issues, you know, maybe chewing up the shoes and all these other kind of things that puppies may do, what are some of those things associated with puppyhood that maybe could be a problem for folks?
Puppies go through emotional development between, their birth and about the 2-year mark. So during that time, you'll get a whole variety of behaviors, and many of those can be very unsettling to children, and they can be upsetting to the family. Chewing furniture, chewing everything, jumpy, mouthy behavior, and this one can be really challenging for families with small kids. Mm-hmm. Most puppies go through a phase where they jump up and just want to bite and chew on everything when they're teething, and that can be a deal breaker for people. So with families, we really counsel them about what they should expect, and mostly what people don't anticipate is how long it takes for that new puppy to settle into the family. That's true. Really about a year process.
Yeah. Wow, okay. Good to know there. Final thought, final advice, final guidance as folks are thinking puppies?
Yes. When people are looking at ages of dogs to get for their family, we're for families with children, for busy families, we recommend dogs that are about a year and a half and up because they've been through kind of the worst of puppyhood.
Right.
They've kind of settled in. They can be left alone for longer amounts of time. Unless you are a person that can get home every 2 to 3 hours, a young puppy is probably not the best choice for you.
Right. Maybe if you work from home, that'd be a good option. Yeah, and I think the shelter has puppy classes
Yes, we have lots of classes offered through the Park Authority. Just check out Park Takes. We have puppy obedience, dog obedience classes for that new family member, and we've learned that people who go to training and obedience classes are much, much more likely to retain that pet and to be happier pet owners.
Okay. All right, so remember the animal shelter when you're thinking about the puppy, but make sure you're prepared for that young pooch. And don't forget our featured pet is Solomon.
Oh, Solomon. He is a big, goofy, mastiff dog. He was brought from another shelter, from a rural shelter, where he really had no chance of getting adopted, and he was running out of time at that shelter. So we brought him to our shelter. Well, he's probably about 85 pounds. Very slow-moving dog. He's been adopted 3 times in 2 weeks.
Oh, gosh.
And he's been returned every time.
Poor
and
guy.
No fault of his own. In two of the homes, he was kind of bullied by the smaller dogs. So he's kind of a wimp, and he needs a home, either with a very gentle, kind dog.
Right. Or no dog.
Or maybe none. But he's a really sweet guy, and he has a wrinkly, he almost has a face like a Shar Pei, a really wrinkly face. So he's looking for his fourth and hopefully final home.
Oh, gosh. Let's make it the final. Let's not put Solomon through that again.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for the time that we've got together on the Animal Shelter Pawcast. Thanks again to Animal Control Sergeant Kim England for being with us today. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Don't forget, the Animal Shelter is the perfect place for your new pet, your new addition to your family. So be sure to check out the Fairfax County Animal Shelter at 4500 West Ox Road in Fairfax. The hours are Tuesday through Friday from noon to 7 p.m. Shelters also open on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
For more Fairfax County Animal Shelter news and events, visit us online at fairfaxcounty.gov/animalshelter and be sure to check out the calendar of events located on the site. You can also call 703-830-1100 extension 2 or email animalshelter@fairfaxcounty.gov to have all of your questions answered. To see the latest shelter news and events, find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And don't forget the television show Tips and Tales, which is on our Channel 16. Animal Shelter Pawcast is produced by the Fairfax County, Virginia government. We thank you for listening.